The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Usually we have a member who lights the chalice. This morning, since this is the last time that I'll be lighting this chalice, which I've borrowed from Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship during the pandemic, I wanted to light the chalice. So I'm going to say the chalice lighting words, and then after I've said the chalice lighting words, we're going to join in a choral response. And the choral response includes a chorus that you will sing. The words of your part will be, "In hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In hope, in prayer, we're right here." And it's from a song called "We Rise." So the words are, "Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, bring to us beauty, wisdom, and joy." Now join during the chorus part of this song, "We Rise." The words are on the screen.
We rise, humbly hearted, rise, won't be divided, rise, with spirit to guide us, rise, in hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In a hope, in prayer, we're right here. In a hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In hope, in prayer, children rise, elders with wisdom rise, ancestors surround us rise, in hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In prayer,
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
So our gathering song is, Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire, and the words will appear on the lyrics will appear on the video. Have a conversation through story, which I've entitled The Parable of the Soils. So this comes from a familiar parable to many of us who may be aware of some of the Christian parables. Now, the thing about parables is that those were the ways that Jesus often taught through sayings and through parables. And parables are a lot less doctrinaire than some of the doctrines that emerged from his teachings. Parables involved the listener in making sense of that parable through their own experience, rather than imposing a particular belief or conclusion of this parable on the listener. They were meant to engage you in the story. So this one is often called the parable of the sower and the seed, and I'm going to give it a particular twist this morning by calling it the parable of the soils, because I want to emphasize a particular piece of this. Now, this particular slide actually comes from a very contemporary illumination of this scripture done by the Benedictine monks in St. John's Monastery in Collegeville, Minnesota. And you'll see there Jesus here appears in blue jeans. There's a kind of a contemporary feel, and you see that the seeds are being thrown on various soils that you might be able to detect at the bottom of the image here. And some of the seeds even go out beyond just the picture itself. So there are different kinds of soils that the seeds that are being sown can fall on. The seeds can fall on a path with no soil. And you can ask yourself, what would happen to seeds that fall on a path with no soil? Or the seeds could fall on a rocky path. And you can ask yourself, what might happen to seeds that fall on a rocky soil or rocky path. Or the seeds could fall on a soil with thorns. And you might ask yourself, what would happen to seeds that find themselves being thrown on soil with thorns? Or seeds could fall on good soil. And so in this parable, I want to have us reflect upon our own soils, the soil of our own self, our own being. How ready are we to receive seeds of wisdom, lessons learned from life? How ready are we to experience life as it's occurring? How available are we to insight and new knowledge? How available are we to one another? And so the question that I would ask us to reflect on first is, how is it with your soil right now? So take a moment and ask yourself, what does my soil feel like at this point? The soil of my own being. What does my soil feel like? How ready is it to receive new wisdom, new insight, to be able to receive the experience of my life in this moment? And at different points in our life and at different times, we might have a different kind of inner soil, a different kind of availability to new insight or new learning. So no one needs to reveal this, but I'd like for you to think about and do your own pulse taking at this moment. Which of these particular soils do you identify with right now? Is it the path with no soil, so not really able to receive anything new or new insight or new learning? Or the rocky soil, maybe receiving some, but it's really not going to take that much root in you? Or is it the soil with thorns, where it might get mixed up with a lot of other kinds of experiences and other things going on in your life, and so you can't really see that seed blossoming in and of itself alone? Or do you feel like you have good soil right now, that you're available to learning and to gathering insight from your own experience? So how is it with your soil? So that's the one thing I'd like for us to reflect on. And then the other thing that will lead us into our meditation, our musical meditation, where we're going to ask you to participate, is this quote: we cannot force someone to hear a message they are not ready to receive, but we must never underestimate the power of planting a seed. What I love about this quote is that for me, it really means that we don't have to hold back. We don't have to, in a sense, dial ourselves down and not give forth our best seed, our best wisdom, our best insight, no matter how ready the soil is. Because sometimes, whether or not it's the right moment, it could be the time for us to give what truth, what insight, what learning we would like to share. So we'll move now into our musical meditation. And during this time, you will be invited to write in the chat the seeds of hope that you have for yourself or for this congregation or for the world that we share. So what is that seed of hope that you would like to plant for yourself, for this faith community, for this wider community? And you might imagine yourself completing the sentence, I hope for. So write those in the chat during this musical meditation, and then we'll read some of those or most of those aloud. So let's listen to the musical meditation while you take a moment to write in the chat your completion of the sentence, I hope for.
We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fire. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now. And what a time to be alive. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. Time to be alive. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love.
And so now Preston will read some of the seeds of hope that you shared. We'll just hear your comments, but not give a name to those so that we can hold each one in our heart as our prayer for you as well. Preston.
Several people hope for world peace. One person said, I hope for this congregation to thrive in fellowship. I hope for a world where my children can thrive, and their children can thrive, and their children can thrive. I hope for less politicization of the environment. I hope for a world that will be safe for our children. I also hope our country, hope our democracy survives in this country. I hope for always learning and doing better. It's never too late to learn from others and experiences. I hope that our congregation is open to a variety of opinions and is willing to search for creativity on the new path we will be taking soon and after we become in person. We meet in person. I hope our fellowship expands connections to our community. I hope for reconciliation and finding common ground for the country. I hope for the time when we can come back together. I hope for that simple face-to-face fellowship. I hope for a kinder, more thoughtful society, and I hope that handles all the ills. For myself, greater joy. For Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, resolve to deal with the uncertainties in this time of change and transition for the world, revitalization of the spirit, which begins with a commitment to seeking truth and denouncing lies and falsehood. I hope our congregation finds the leadership it needs to thrive and grow in the coming year. I hope for keeping my soil fertile enough to take in all the new learning that is in front of me right now without being overwhelmed and shutting down.
Okay. Thank you, Preston. So let's take a moment and hold all those hopes that we've heard as if they were our own hopes. And let's plant them in our collective soil. Let's bless those hopes and let those hopes, as they are cultivated in their realization, let those hopes also bless us, bless those who come into this circle, bless those in the world who most need hope. So may it be. Amen. So my sermon is entitled Teachable Moments, and I allowed myself some teachable moments by also asking for some insights from members of the congregation, which I'll share towards the end of my prepared remarks with you. So if you were here for my sermon on June 20th, the topic was improvising even when we don't have to. You might have remembered my high-tech attempt to illustrate with elastic that we're living in a time that has, particularly during this pandemic, that has stretched us. When we've had to stretch ourselves, reluctantly or not, we had to improvise and find ways to do familiar things in unfamiliar ways. I pointed out that, understandably, our tendency is to let go of this time of stretching ourselves and snap back to get on with things as they used to be. And I encouraged us to resist too quickly that just snapping back, to resist that temptation to just snap back and, as I put it, instead snap to it. Since that time of that sermon, I came across this insight by the author, Arundhati Roy, who asserts that historically pandemics have forced humans to break with the past and imagine their world anew. And as she goes on to say, this one's no different. It is a portal, a gateway between one world and the next. And then she says, we can choose to walk through it, dragging the carcasses of our prejudice and hatred, our dead ideas, or we can walk through that portal lightly, with little luggage, ready to imagine another world and ready to fight for it. So I wonder, which will it be? I suspect that for most of us, we will want to snap back to our perceived normal, to the comfort of that, no matter what is unfolding and being revealed in the world around us. And it's understandable. And also, I know that beyond the stresses and stretches of this pandemic, that life will continue to serve up these moments in which we find that we are ready or not having to stretch ourselves, that we are having to pause, that we're having to let go, and we're having to move through before we can actually move on. Yes, you and I know that life often provides these moments, sometimes unanticipated, sometimes joyous, sometimes challenging, and sometimes painful, in which the world as we know it falls apart. And it doesn't always take a pandemic to do that. The Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron recognizes these inevitable moments and calls them when things fall apart. And she makes this point about those times. She says, to be fully alive, fully human, and completely awake is to be continually thrown out of the nest. To live fully is to be always in no man's land, to experience each moment as completely new and fresh. And to live is to be willing to die over and over again. So let's test that with some of our own truth of our own experience. Take a moment now to think about at least one of those moments when things fell apart for you. One of those moments when you had to pause, where you had to back up, where you had to open yourself up to new learning or new insight in order to move forward. Take a moment to think about one of those now before I proceed with sharing one of my own. You got something? Give me a little signal, a little sign that you've thought of something so I can see. Okay, great. All right. Can't you tell how I miss being in the same room with you? I still need to kind of get some kind of reaction here. So while these moments when things fall apart can be the most unsettling moments, they are also the moments that we recognize how we respond really makes the difference on whether these become teachable moments or not. So as I reflected upon teachable moments, I concluded that in order to be teachable, we need to be reachable first. In order to be teachable, we need to be reachable first. The soil of our being needs to be able to be reached and ready to receive new insight, new learning, and new experience. We have to be willing to experience what we are experiencing. And the problem is that we or others tend to intercept those moments before the learning within our experience can really be realized. So when I was 40 years old and my first spouse died, I had many well-intentioned friends who wanted to move me along, push me on the fast track of grieving rather than being with me or wanting me to be with the experience, or even just being alongside of me as I was grieving and trying to make sense of that experience. But fortunately, there was some internal wisdom in me that came to the realization that their wanting me to move along was really not about me. It was about them, their discomfort, their capacities to deal with the complex emotions that accompany dying and grieving, their not knowing what to do or to say that would fix things. And so they so much wanted to fix things. They were so well intentioned. And when I recognized that, I had more compassion for them and understood what was behind their well-intentioned actions. But I decided to stay with my grieving in any case. These moments in our life can be tender and fleeting. These moments in our life, in whatever way we've experienced the when things fall apart moments in our own lives, they can be also generative with opportunities for becoming conscious, for becoming aware. We can gain new insight even in the midst of sorrow. We can learn much while a transition is underway. So if you've lost a loved one or experienced some other world falling apart kind of moment, you know that that period when your grief or your sorrow is so deep, for a period of time, you begin to look at life and customary things more reflectively, more poignantly for a while. It's a liminal time, it's a liminal space in which you just don't take things for granted, but you begin to experience things in a fresh way. A time when we are in between, reflective, we become reflective, we sense the poignancy of life or relationships and life itself more acutely. We live in a culture that loves to hurry through these moments rather than to linger with them. Even the best intentions, we attempt to hurry people through their own grief or move them through whatever transition or hard moment they're going through as quickly as we can. We think of those moments as times to kind of move on rather than to be with or to move through. What helped you to be with those moments rather than just pull through them when they were occurring? What helped you to resist the temptation to fix yourself or let others fix you and therefore, in a sense, avoid the generative moment that was present for you for deepening your awareness of emerging wisdom and insight and for learning? All of that needs careful tending. If not, like the embers in a fire, they burn down and their light fades away and is extinguished. It could be that our human tendency is to avoid these discomforting moments, to fill in something quickly, anything, which actually leads me to ask the question, do you know what the difference is between a rat and a human being? I know that was the question that was right at the top of your mind right now, right? So it could be indeed that as humans, we get so caught up in our stories about things that we don't actually enter the moments before us. So oftentimes a rat, if they have five tunnels in front of them and cheese is put at the end of a third tunnel, they will keep searching. They can smell the cheese and they'll search for it. And then they find it at the third end of the third tunnel and they get their reward. But the next day you put them there and they have a memory that allows them to find that third tunnel again and keep trying until they can. So for human beings, however, if we don't find what we are wanting right away, if let's say that we go down that third tunnel and what we want is not there, then we make up all kinds of stories about that event. We make up religions about it. We make up all kinds of fantasies about what we could or should do or whatever. We get very attached to the stories that we make up about things when they aren't going our own way. Oftentimes these stories separate us from the teachable moment that's actually there because we don't really abide with them. Instead, we move on, we go with our story, we go with what is convenient. And it usually takes spiritual experiences or a lot of therapy to help us recognize how caught up we are with our own habitual ways of doing things, trying to make what we think should work, work, and trying the same thing again and again. It takes a lot of spiritual and personal discipline to give up our habitual ways of thinking about things and also habitual ways about doing things. Stephen Hayes, who was the founder of Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, captures a strategy actually just in the title of his book. The title is Get Out of Your Mind and Into Your Life. Often our mind is what comes up with the stories that can come up with these familiar ideas, the often told stories that separate us from actually accepting and knowing our real experiences. Our quick fixes, in other words, can often be our way to avoid real learning. You know, if we have a convenient story about it, and it's usually a story about someone else who's the problem, then we avoid really being with the moment. Again, I say, in order for a moment in life to be teachable, we have to be reachable. So another psychologist, Daniel Kahneman, in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, points out that the speed at which we find explanations for things that happen make it difficult for us to really learn the deep truth about that experience. And the deep truth is that the world is much more than the fast stories that we can tend to come up with about our life. Kahneman points out that we have essentially two minds. The first mind, let's call it the fast thinking brain, operates automatically and quickly with little or no effort and no sense of voluntary control. Often when we're driving a familiar route or being asked to respond to a question similar to what's the sum of 2 + 2, our response is automatic. We don't deliberate. And then we also have this other mind that actually allocates attention and effort to mental reflective activities. It turns towards our subjective experiences, to the choices before us. It engages us in pausing and thinking about things, being open to changing and learning. And we can call this our slow thinking mind. More often than not, we gravitate towards the fast thinking brain, even in situations that require more thought, more patience, more reflection, more computation. We seize on a conclusion or a story or a fix to resolve the tension of not knowing, or of not taking the time to actually know and to become. This is a pattern that intercepts the teachable moments that arise around us all of the time. I can think of lots of examples of those when it's really not clear about whether I am or people I'm working with really know and are available to knowing their own experience. You know that joke, which I may have told before about the light bulb joke. How many Unitarian Universalists does it take to change a light bulb? First, you have to have a discussion on whether you want to change. So I remember in my first sermon that I did at Thomas Paine on September 9th, 2018, it was our annual gathering of the waters. I shared these words. Certainly burdens and challenges, obligations and tasks, agendas and responsibilities are always going to be there. But for God's sake, or as some of us might say, for gosh darn sakes, can we just pause together at this threshold and acknowledge it? This is not just an add water and stir moment that we're in right now. This is a new moment for Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. So let's pause, I continued. Let's recognize that we must savor what needs savoring, and let's acknowledge what we might have to let go of. And let's open our hearts and our imaginations once more to what wants to emerge. I call these one of my jumper cable attempts to get a charge going. And you have to recognize this has probably a lot more to say about me than about you, since I tend to go into congregations as a consultant trying to set up a setting where we're asking questions and responding to questions like, what do you want to do together? What are your aims? And then really getting some heartfelt responses. I would preach these same words to you this morning at this particular time of transition for you. So this is one of the functions of spiritual practice. It's to heighten our awareness of ourselves and our world and our own ways of interacting with the world. And even though our human tendency is to miss the moments that we're in as we rush through them, life itself inevitably provides some reminders and some lessons along the way. Occasionally we're surprised by wonder. Occasionally we're stopped our tracks by disappointment or unanticipated suffering. And occasionally it seems we're tapped on the shoulder by life itself and we hear the echoing whispers within ourselves to notice, to appreciate, to shift, to recognize that we don't need to get so attached to our quick fixes or our stories. And we can allow ourselves to experience the freshness of this moment. Tony Black told me the story of when a new chaplain arrived at Meadowood, the continuing care community where she and some others in our congregation live, a group of Unitarian Universalists introduced themselves to the chaplain. The chaplain responded, "I don't think I've ever met a Unitarian Universalist. I don't even think I know what that is." And Tony blurted out, "Oh, we're the heretics." Take a note. A teachable moment might require getting someone's attention and maybe putting a little surprise or shock value in your response as well. As Tony and I chatted, I reminded her that the etymology of the word heretic is from the Greek word heretikos, tikos, able to choose. And our Unitarian Universalist heritages have always reminded us that we are committed to being able to make choices, to not just be automatic or to stay in neutral, not to be bystanders in our own life or within life itself. Essential to our own creative approach to religion and to life is providing the place where we're able to choose by reflecting upon our life experiences, by attending to the wisdom of the world's spiritual traditions that illuminate our experience, engage us in learning from many sources. So, in other words, just because we might have a belief that someone may consider heretical isn't enough. Our rebellious spirit might boast about it, but it really requires more. To really live up to the ennobling role of a heretic doesn't mean to simply dispute traditional religious thoughts. It means also being willing to engage individually and in together as a religious community in the hard work to do the slow thinking of discerning a meaningful personal religion and to respond to the interpersonal challenges and the ethical dilemmas of our time with no fixed ready answers. And so I went on to ask some members of our congregation what were some of the teachable moments or lessons in their own life from reflecting upon their own teachable moments. So I want to share some of those responses with you now. And I'm basically going to be using their words. And as I do this, you might think about and reflect upon some of your own experiences as well. So this is a fairly random group. Manny said that when she reflected upon what was about the moments or the situations that made her ready, or others ready to learn. Sometimes she says situations repeat your perspective changes and you see or hear something you never heard before. It's kind of like a light bulb moment. Oh, I see now. And what was it about you or others in the situation that made you open to learning? Always asking questions or just listening instead of reacting. Lately, reflecting is like asking yourself questions. So as I go through these, think about the practices that people are sharing. So Preston talked about an experience in the 1970s when he was running a low-income housing project. And there was a gentleman who ran the water system, was licensed by grandfathering. So he got free rent, small stipend, for which he did very little. And Preston really recognized that they need a real licensed water system operator in that situation. So Preston decided to take the courses and the test to get it certified. He reflects that the process was the beginning of a path that eventually led to degrees from Drexel University and a career in civil and environmental engineering. For Preston, necessity was what made me ready to learn. A passion for science and public service and a love of water made me open to learning. I also intuit from that story what also made Preston recognize that opportunity for learning was really to act on something where he felt there was a gap between what should be and what could be. Sherry also said that necessity for her was what brought teachable moments possible for her. She says, "I've been hit with challenges and difficulties. I've been open to learning due to necessity. And wow, I've learned that I can do something when I have to." I think that works for a lot of us. Linda Weaver, and we have a few teachers, former teachers in our congregation, had some actual experiences in the classroom that they shared. And Linda focused on a time when a student didn't seem to really be paying attention to what was going on in the class, particularly the fascinating teacher before them. And so Linda said, Quelly, are you paying attention to me? And with honesty of an eight-year-old and in a small voice, he said, no. My indignant reply, really? Why not? And then he confessed in an even quieter voice, because I'm hungry. I'm thinking about my stomach. That was an aha moment for Linda when she asked, is anyone else hungry? And that led her, and when she saw every hand in the room raised, she recognized that she needed to do something different. And so she got her lunch, she got some snacks from the faculty lounge. And she said, that moment taught me that I had a great deal to learn from my students and their reality. And nothing is learned until we are focused, ready, willing, and able to be in that moment. Gina also shared an experience of being a teacher, and there was a student who exploded when his quiz was not perfect. He argued, he yelled, he wouldn't listen to her explanation. And finally, Gina told him that she'd be willing to talk with him after class. And so after class, she did speak to him. And she said, John, we need to talk. And if you get angry at me, would that really help you learn? That's okay with me, but getting angry is hindering your learning, and that's what bothers me. So he teared up and he responded, you really do care that I learned. He heard that authenticity, that genuine care in her voice. And then Gina also kind of acknowledged that some of his own experience matched what her father had done and what she had done in order to study. That, you know, going to school older than other students, having a full-time job made it hard sometimes to manage all at once. And, but she also acknowledged that he was more focused than the other younger ones. And she explained why she gave quizzes. It was a way to get feedback on what students needed to learn, and suggested that when he received less than a perfect grade, to discuss it with her, so that he could improve. And then she shares that he became one of her best students. I'm gonna move along. I'll share these slides later, but some of the highlights from Gina's comments were meeting the person with respect, with heart and intellect, establishing trust, but also for the person receiving it, really being able to listen, really being able to recognize that if someone's giving you a lesson that you've heard others from others, maybe this is a time to really listen and see if there's something you can understand about yourself as well. Tom shared a time when after his mother had died, his sister moved in to help the father where she lived in Ohio, so she could take care of him. And when Tom arrived on the scene, he was really surprised that his sister was not just helping the father. She was cleaning the apartment, changing his bed sheets, washing his clothes, doing the food shopping. Although he was in reasonably good health, he really did not know how to do any of those tasks. That's another one of those aha moments. So for Tom, he recognized he'd never wanted to be in that helpless kind of situation himself. And so when he got home, he made sure he could operate all the appliances, wash clothes, cook and prepare meals, and be self-sufficient if he ever needed to be. And needless to say, he says it served him very well. David Drum said that, I'm including this one because he said he realized after hearing a talk from me in a sermon that if he's planning to continue to be a member of the religious organization, that he should try to get involved again in doing something. He's done things all over the years and so forth, obviously, but this felt like another time for him to step up. And so he felt inspired to recognize that perhaps he can do more than just show up for church. And then Amy Neighbor shared one where she basically said she came to realize that if I wanted something and it was difficult for me, I needed to persist and to struggle, and that was okay. In fact, that's how it's done. If you enjoy the process or desire the outcome enough, it's worth the struggle, and there's no need to be feeling ashamed or embarrassed. And so if she didn't know how to do something, if it didn't come to her easily, she began to like watch and recognize that even some of the very intelligent and educated people kept trying, rethought, redirected, tried again. They were undeterred. And over time, they became quite proficient in the task. So she learned from that observation something about herself as well. Kay shares the experience of her husband, Jack, who she says was a strong, loving, energetic man who loved to ride his bike, but the only time he wore a helmet was with the grandchildren. 15 years ago, September 27th, he rode his bike for lunch with a group of young retired men, and he wasn't wearing his helmet. A car struck the car, struck the bike. He hit his head on the curb. He never regained consciousness. And so to this day, Kay says that if ever she sees someone riding a bike, particularly a child, not wearing a helmet, she would stop them and tell this story about Jack's death. So she took a sorrowful and painful event and figured out a way to make it become a lesson for others as well. And then Susan says, in real life situations, not in school settings, she's another one of our former teachers, she feels like she's had teachable moments when she's struggling with how to handle a problem or a situation. Without trying to solve anything, I try to open to the environment to be present. Often during a walk or listening to someone or doing a reading or in a conversation or just meditating informally, a solution or at least a new idea or two appears right in front of me. I do think I miss out if I don't remain open to a new way of looking at something, or at least admit that I don't always know the best way to proceed. So that sense of openness, that sense of acknowledging what you don't know and being open to searching or learning is what Susan highlighted. And Larry says, to me, any moment with or without other people present is a teachable or learnable moment. So if we're open to hearing the voice of others or the voice within us. So you might reflect this week on your own teachable moments. What is it that made those moments teachable for you, ready to learn, available to learning? What is it about you or others in a situation that made you or them open to learning as well? So, right. So I want to thank everybody for their insights. I want to thank you for sharing that, and to recognize that as Thomas Paine is in this time of transition, that it's also a time in which you can prepare the soil of your own being as a congregation and as individuals, and ask yourself what will make us available to knowing, to learning, to be taught, and to be teachable, to really learn from this experience that you're in. So we now move to a time that we call Matters of the Heart. This is a time for us to share a joy or a concern that we might be holding by first reflecting on our own heart and our own experience. And then if you would like to, you can share it with others that are gathered here today, and you'll get instructions on how to do that. So during this musical meditation, let's take a time to reflect. What is it that you're holding in your heart? What joys are there? What concerns might you have for yourself, for those you love, or this world? Thank you.
We'll bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The words will appear on screen here in just a moment.
So as I prepare to extinguish this chalice, we are going to say the unison closing words together, which will appear on the screen and the slide. We shall not cease from our exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. Our closing song is Just As Long As I Have Breath. Join in, dance in, do what you'd like to this song. Two, three, four.